Well, let's put ourselves in a receptive mode by doing the sound of Om together. Let's begin by taking three conscious and deep breaths. And with a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. We invite the music of New Dance, the rehearse. It's our background today. And we hold that sound of Om in our hearts as we tune in to the sound of the universe. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was Om. The spiritual wisdom of Satchidananda, the Bhagavad Gita, which translated as the Song of God or the Song of the Lord. Satchidananda and his path for practical spiritual transformation. We've been studying Satchidananda for a while. We're going to jump into chapter 15 now, which discusses the tree of life, which is the tree of knowledge, as in the Bible. We'll be looking at sloka or verse number 5 in chapter 15. A lot of meat here. Shall we jump in?
Yes.
Here we go. Sloka 5. Fortunate are those seekers who are no longer deluded by the tree of life and thus are liberated from pride. Remember in the Bible, tree of knowledge was there, tempted Adam and Eve before they partook of the fruit. They lived in harmony without opposites. Without opposites. When they ate from the tree of knowledge and entered into what the Bhagavad Gita is calling delusion by naming this and naming that, naming this and naming that. When we are no longer deluded, we're liberated from pride. What pride? The pride of thinking that we know, of assuming that we know, of having the opinions that we have that we know. As we have heard in other spiritual traditions, in our spirit life, as opposed to our secular life, our goal should not be to gain more knowledge, but to gain more unknowledge. Letting go of the things that are somehow deluding us. And Satchidananda will talk about this. Our pride or arrogance that the mind thinks it knows something. Notice that this exists in the mind. The tree of life exists in the mind. Good, evil, right, wrong, all exists in the mind. And also pride exists in the mind. Because they have conquered personal attachments, they ever abide in their true identity, which is the capital S self, or the Christ consciousness. conquered personal attachments. Personal attachments. All the things we desire to have, and in particular the things we desire not to lose. How many things in life do we desire not to lose? Our bodies, our health, for example, we're attached to them, aren't we? Through conquering personal attachments, not that we don't have them, but we just conquered them. They're there and they don't run us. We abide in our true identity, which is the self. No longer disturbed by personal desires, which have completely abated. That would be something, wouldn't it? Or the pairs of opposites from the tree of life, such as pleasure and pain, they attain that eternal goal, which is to exist in spirit, in the peace of our original oneness. Where do these personal desires reside? In the mind. Where do the pairs of opposites reside? In the mind. Where does the tree of knowledge have its roots? In the mind. Satchitananda now wants to talk about the mind and how we can free ourselves from the tyranny of the mind. First step is to not only admit, but to experience that we have a mind. We all have minds, we have thoughts. We say our mind is our thoughts. We have thoughts. And the thoughts are not us, it's something that we have. It's one thing to say that intellectually, but to experience it, to experience, there's a thought that I'm thinking, and it's not me in a sense that's thinking it, it's my mind. And to train ourselves to notice that it's the mind, not my true self, that has thoughts. It actually has feelings, desires. And by getting that small step of separation, we take a step on our path to spiritual transformation. This is a practical thing we can do, very practical, just to be aware that you have a mind, the thoughts are in your mind, they're not who you are. Even feelings, not who you are. This is particularly useful when we have repeating thoughts. Have you ever had repeating thoughts? Something just goes through your mind. Maybe you're upset about something. Maybe you're happy about something. I've had a repeating thought from last week, for example. It's a song. Let's see if I can remember the song against the singing that's going on there in the background. Love, sweet love, that's the only thing there's not.
There's just too little
of
what the world needs now
is love, sweet love. That's the only thing there's just too little of.
Was that Butch Cassidy?
I think so. We don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides and up to climb till the end of time. But the world needs. Anyway, my mind sings this to me a lot. It just sort of pops up. And I'm happy with that. I'm grateful for all my mind singing that song rather than jumping over and pulling on unhappy news from the television or the newspapers. And it's my mind that's doing that. And I approve of that, and I encourage my mind to keep singing that song when I notice it's singing it. Got it? I notice my mind is singing the song, not, in a sense, me. All right, let's jump ahead into some commentary. Okay, we've discussed this topic before, so we're going to kind of jump into the middle of his commentary. And here he says, just like I was saying, my mind sings that song. He's saying, well, you don't look at it that way. You assume all these qualities rich, poor. Have you ever said I'm rich? Have you ever said I'm poor?
Both might be true simultaneously.
Well, he's going to say, in a sense,
neither one is true.
The mind has the thought, I'm rich. The mind has the thought, I'm poor. But who we really are is the eternal knower and the observer that the mind thinks those thoughts. Got it? So can we take that step? Full, hungry. I'm full. Wait a minute, am I full? Stomach sends a signal to the mind, says I don't want to eat anymore. So in a sense, the mind is full. Or the mind is hungry, getting messages from the organs. Happy, unhappy. Woke up this morning, unhappy. Yesterday I woke up and something bad happened and I was unhappy. Satchitananda would say the mind is happy or unhappy. That center of who you really are just notices and knows that. That's why we say, wake up! Wake up. What are we waking up to? What are we waking up? We often hear this in Buddhism and in the Indian tradition, wake up. We hear that life is a delusion, but it seems pretty real. And the spiritual teachings say, wake up. What are we waking up from and what to? What are we waking up from? And what are we waking up to? What are we seeing before we wake up? And what do we notice after we wake up?
And are we waking up from, you did ask that, what are we waking up from besides sleep?
What are we waking up from? No, this is nothing to do with sleep. This is a metaphor for our consciousness. So what are we waking up from?
And to. From the trance.
And what are we waking up to? Yeah,
to awareness, self-awareness.
Identifying with the mind.
Conscious.
Pardon?
Identifying with the mind.
Yeah, waking up from identifying with the mind, saying, I am rich. I am poor, and taking it personally. Rather noticing that the mind has a thought, I am poor. And when we wake up from this, as the Gita would call it, delusion, what are we waking up to? What's our consciousness we're waking up to? Where's the from and what's the to, yes?
Center of the air.
Say again?
Center of who we are.
Center of who we are.
The knower, the observer.
We're waking up to that we are the one observing all of this. So we're peacefully observing all of this. Ah, that's my mind having a thought. That's what wake up means. Wake up. Wake up to notice the function of your mind and who you really are. He has some more thoughts on that.
In other words, we are not our mind. We're not the messages our minds are telling us.
No, in the same sense that we're not our hand. We're not our finger. We're not our fingernail. If you lose a fingernail or you get a haircut, you are still who you are.
I'm going to take that one step further. If we lose our mind, and there are some people who don't have mental faculties, what would he say to that?
In a fundamental sense, there is no change. We are still who we are.
Separate from the mind.
Separate from the mind. It's just the mind works differently. We know the mind works differently in everybody. We see that. We see people have opinions that are all wrong, for example. There's a lot of opinions out there that we assert are wrong. And if there are relatives, they assert that, no, your opinions are the wrong ones. Can we learn to step back from our own mind where those opinions reside and notice that both of us and the one sitting over there who's lost the mental faculties is still a human being worthy of respect and compassion and patience, going through the steps from being born to leaving the body. Whole time being that essence, having different things during the process. Obviously, our minds have changed over time, haven't they? Do we think the same way we thought when we were adolescents?
Thankfully, no.
Thankfully, no. So our minds have changed as well.
Even in 5 years. This is about 5 years. About last week.
Right, yeah.
And somehow, through some mysterious process, in a way we don't notice it as those changes take place. We can look back and with some deep perception we can say, oh, I remember when I was like this. But it's sort of hard to remember, isn't it? So, and another aspect of our humanness is, except for very isolated incidents, we don't remember anything of our childhood. Maybe an incident, one or two, or three. But the rest of it, gone. So that consciousness, we can see a consciousness that we probably had when we were kids, and other kids, full of life and jumping around, open for things, learning new things all the time. But we've sort of forgotten that. It's why Jesus, when he was preaching one day, and someone tried to get rid of the little children that were shouting and bothering him, said, no, no, bring the children to me. Suffer the little children.
Be patient.
Meaning be patient. Because in them is the Spirit of God. We can learn from the little children. Now, Satchitananda is saying that these things we've been talking about, he's saying, whatever you do, keep this in mind constantly. Well, there you go. Are you willing to keep that in mind constantly? Well, if you can do it constantly, at least now and then. Maybe during your time of meditation, if you have a practice of meditation, at least at that time, you can bring to mind, okay, not my mind. I'm going to now put my mind in a meditative state by repeating my meditative things that I repeat. And notice that it's my mind that's doing this, and take a step back. And notice the mind doing the meditative practice. And then, maybe not instantly, but noticing, oh, the mind strayed from the meditative practice and has gone off and started thinking about these other things. That's when you really want to remember, ah, it's not me that strayed. There's nothing wrong with my meditative practice. I am not wrong. Rather, in my meditative practice, my mind strayed and went and thought about this string of things and went all over the place before I suddenly noticed. Can each of you remember when, in your meditative practice, you noticed your mind strayed? Huh? In your meditative practice, can you remember when you noticed your mind strayed? That's when you're following Satchitananda's advice. What part of you noticed that? Some observer part of you. That's what he's recommending we get more and more in touch with.
The mind straying would be no different than, say, use the hand earlier, we feel a tingle in our hand. It's part of our body that is experiencing something kind of independently. Our mind wandering would be similar to that. And noticing that, and being aware of that, it's different from us, our core.
We could say the tingle actually occurs in the mind. The nerves in the fingers send messages to the mind.
Everything physical happens in the mind. Yes.
But it's in the mind. Of course, we experience it as being in the fingers and so on, which is appropriate. But you could ask yourself the question, where is this happening, in my fingers or in my mind? You could ask that a question. Just like when you noticed your mind wandered during meditation, you could ask, who noticed that? What noticed that? These are questions you can ask to help you make some progress. That's the practicality of these teachings, to remember to question, where did that come from? Keep this in mind constantly. Think, who is doing this? Who's doing this? It's a question. It's a question that doesn't have an answer in words, but has an answer in some knowing. Who is doing this? Who is eating now? Who is eating now? I'm eating. Really? Who is eating now? Who is eating now? Am I eating? Is it my body? My mind? Who is eating now? Who is hungry? Who is hungry?
Hopefully they were hungry before they started eating, but
generally not.
Generally
start eating the same time every day. When we go in the atrium and we see the goodies, we start eating.
Yeah. That's true. It's triggered. It's triggered in our mind, our memory, taste, our smell, sense of smell. Yeah.
Habits are our best friends and can be our worst enemies. If we have good habits and let our good habits guide us, they're wonderful. That means we don't have to think about things with those pesky minds that wander around. We just let our habits take care of us. But every now and then our habits betray us. Like when they take us to the atrium table and we see that thing, we shouldn't eat. But we're tempted, and we eat it anyway. Now the challenge is, can we still take a step back from our minds and say, I know my mind doesn't like this. Well, anyway, that's just my mind thinking. And notice the body's eating it or it's not. And step back from evaluations and judgments. Back.
At the same time, I'm guessing I could also believe, I could also focus on, is it my opinion, my ego, which is not the true I, or the capital S self, right?
Questions like these are not truly meant to be answered.
Right.
As soon as you answer the question, it's wrong.
That's right.
As soon as you come up with some words, ask the question, no, it's not that. Rather, they're meant to be questions held in consciousness to see what experience the question brings forth. And then when you explain the experience to someone later on, you didn't quite get it right, but you did your best. Who's hungry? Who knows who is hungry? Who knows? Who is hungry? Who is enjoying the taste of this food? Am I doing it, or is it my mind or body? These questions you can choose to hold in consciousness, particularly if there's some uncertainty in what you're about to do or what you're doing. If there's some slight off-centeredness in your being, doing something, then if you can remember to ask, who is doing this? Am I doing it? Or is it my mind or my body? Don't have to answer the question. Bringing up the question is sufficient to give you just a step of separation from the thoughts, feelings, and mind, and that true self, the observer, the knower, who you really are. That's the purpose of the questions, to experience the knower, who you truly are, that Christ consciousness, the Atman, the capitalist self. And when you're in that place and suddenly experience that, life takes a different experience. It's not that you do things differently anymore, you probably don't, but you experience your life from a different perspective. Different perspective. Here we go. Is it my mind, my body, or me? If you keep on questioning, even in the midst of heavy work, you separate your identification from the body and mind. This is what he's suggesting we do, to separate our identification. I am rich, I am poor. These are self-defeating mind constructs, and when we can separate our identification from the body and the mind, what happens? That separation is liberation. Liberation. Or freedom from a certain delusion. The delusion, I am poor. Ever seen people say, I am poor? I am poor. And yet, there are people we know who just behave in such a rich fashion. Their wife is given everything they could desire, and we notice that they have what we would call poor circumstances. They could use more to eat, they could use a better shelter, more money. And yet, some people, especially perhaps younger ones, we notice are just so happy, so joyful being in their present moment.
There's not only anecdotal evidence of that, we observe that all the time. There's empirical evidence of that. There are surveys taken around the world to determine which are the happiest nations.
Right.
And the richest ones are not at the top. They're not anywhere near the top.
No.
What others would consider third world countries, poor nations, people with horns, physical want.
Struggling.
Yeah. And yet, their smiles, their self awareness, their happiness.
Yes.
Relationships are all much deeper and richer.
So it makes us think, my goodness, what's this American dream I'm told I need to achieve and wondering if I've got there?
And all the advertisements. commercials and advertisements.
Yeah. If you ever watch commercial television, it's a challenge. They want you to buy stuff and take prescriptions whether you need them or not, and hire the lawyers for the people that they're telling you have done you wrong, and they're going to take care of that. Just more and more. So television is one of our challenges, as well as social media, isn't it? To be in this state, separate your identification from the body and mind. That separation is liberation. You have liberated yourself from the body-mind clutches, and you remember your true nature. You remember your true nature. So in that moment of meditation, when you suddenly realize your mind wandered and you notice that, you liberated yourself in that instant from your body-mind clutches, and it's not that you remember, you experience your true nature in that moment. Then you go out of meditation, mind wanders again. Maybe you have another, what have I wondered? These are all parts of a successful meditation, by the way. I heard someone say in the atrium out there one day, oh, it's so hard to meditate. My mind keeps wandering. So hard to meditate. It's tough. My mind keeps wandering. And I really wanted to fix that person. Don't we all want to fix people? I wanted to fix them and say, wait a minute, no.
That's one of the milestones of the journey.
You're having a perfect meditation. And the most perfect part of the meditation was when you noticed your mind wandering. wandered. What part of you noticed your mind wandered? That observer, that true self.
You often tend to blame yourself for doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
I should have done it.
Right. Yeah.
But that's the mind blaming. Oh, I shouldn't have let my mind wander. What's the matter with me? I've been practicing this for years now. And something must be wrong with me. My mind wandered. These are all mind constructs.
What you're saying is that is actually a gift. We're now aware of the knower, the observer.
We can hold it like this if we choose. During our meditation, whatever shows up is perfect and just right for who we are in that moment. And we can proclaim a perfect meditation as we notice when we were in our meditative thoughts, when we strayed and how we noticed the mind did it and how we noticed it and gently brought the mind back. That's all. Those are all aspects of a perfect meditation. And as long as we hold our meditation in that perfect light, something amazing will happen, I promise you. You will notice your mind tends to wander less because you've let go your judgment of it and your condemnation, and you're feeling that you're a lousy meditator. You've just held what's so in a perfect line. The universe has delivered to you exactly what you needed at exactly the right point in time. It's so grateful. You will find, interestingly enough, that the part of you that judges things, we can't, will later on judge, oh, my meditation's getting better. No, that's more judging. Your meditation isn't getting better. It's just another experience of meditation. Thank you, God. That's the message he's trying to convey here. It all goes back to our mind. You've liberated yourself from the body-mind clutches, and you remember your true nature. Well, you can bless that meditation no matter what happened, as perfect for who you are and were in that moment. That is a liberation. Who's doing the blessing? It's that Christ consciousness, that Atman in you. That's where that blessing springs from and supersedes all the judgments and the I am this and I'm not that. Supersedes that and gives you this amazing feeling of peace. Peace and relaxation. You are just the person you were intended to be. And you're so grateful for having turned out exactly the way you were supposed to. When you're in this consciousness of some separation from the body-mind, perfectly at peace with who you are, another amazing thing happens. You find you're more at peace with other people in the way they are, even the ones with lousy opinions who don't have the proper opinions. Find yourself a little bit more at peace with them as well. But it starts here with us, doesn't it? First the peace comes with us, and then the peace who we are is like a light, and it shines out and illumines those around us, or those we imagine.
Not only illumines, but it can be attractive. People are attracted to the
yes.
light.
Right?
So you can bring others to ask, what is it that you know, that have you learned, have you experienced?
Gosh, you just look terrific today. What? Gee, Jan, you look fantastic today. What? I don't remember you looking this great. What's going on?
Radiant.
You're radiating. You know, our radiance draws people.
Oh, there's a saying, which is, be the change. Mahatma Gandhi is famous for this. Be the change that you want to see.
In the world.
In the world. Be first.
Yes. That's the same thing.
Don't focus on others. Focus on yourself.
Okay. When you are the light that you wish to see in others, no matter how their behavior doesn't change, start to notice the mind in them as well. I find that a useful practice, since we all have cantankerous minds, which I do, a useful practice is to pick at least one person who is present in your thoughts from time to time, with whom you have an issue of disagreement. You don't approve of this, you don't approve of that, or you object to this, you object to that. So you have an issue, that person. I suggest you pick one person like that, and perhaps in your meditation, that's when I choose to do it, I take a breath and get in touch with my heart space. Feel my heart space rising up in me. And I feel my heart. I raise my hands. And I imagine light streaming out of me from my heart and from me. And then I'll bless someone who doesn't need the blessing or might need the blessing. Someone who, maybe a friend or family member who could stand a little light. Now imagine that light enlightening that person. And I bless them. So I've got my light flowing now. My light, can you see it? See the light moving now? Blessing that loved family member or friend who could use a little light. And next, I send the light to that other person, the one that my mind, not me, my mind has disrespected. I'll send the light to that person and see the light in them. And see the light. And that's it, then I go on. I don't wish to be burdened in my mind by negative thoughts. I have lots of them. I just don't wish them to be a burden. So by a practice like that I've described to you, I just release a little bit, not everything, because the mind keeps on reacting. I release a little bit, at least in that moment, I'm in some peace and I can see the light, not only in my loved relative or friend, but in the person that I have been disrespected. Well, you know what time it is?
What's that time?
We probably ought to close. Are there any questions or comments before we close? It's about 5 minutes to 11.
Question about I don't want to say social pressures, but the habitual patterns that we're in when we're offered, like for example, at the kitchen, I'm getting my glass of water, and that's all I'm intending on drinking is to get the church sips of water. And one of the fellow church members who I know dearly, but it doesn't matter her name, she offers me this, what she made, clearly, was the devil's egg. And I know that's not egg, particularly for me, swells up my throat a teeny bit, and I noticed that. And there's part of me that's struggling, saying, yeah, it was one time. There's another thought that says, it's a kind gesture. Another thought is, I could be hungry, you know? And so I give it to her pressure, I take it, and I say thank you, and, you know, a few minutes later, I can actually feel my throat just a teeny bit. Scale of 1 to 10, so it goes to a 1 or a 2 in terms of swelling up.
And why do they call it the devil's egg?
Yeah, and then I got to clear my throat and all that, and then I'm also feeling sensation sitting here from here to here, you know, like a bolt of lightning, which I know is from processed oil. So I know this because of my studies in nutrition for the past little over a year.
Mayonnaise, really?
And the processed oil, which is another story of GMO, the genetic modified. Anyway, so I guess is
accept the gesture.
Accepting.
Accept the gesture, but not the.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. So I guess in this point, after I've already accepted the food and taken it in, it's just self-forgiveness. Is that the first step?
What I'm hearing, Sam, in this lovely story, and I thank you for sharing.
Sure.
What I'm hearing is, this is all about Sam. This is all about Sam. Sam has problems with eggs, Sam has these thoughts, and so on. If in the moment you're offered the egg, you could transform your experience to, this is about the person giving me the egg. That's what this is all about. This has nothing to do with me. And if in that beautiful moment of someone offering you something, you can look in that person's eyes with great respect and love and compassion, and just take a moment to say, thank you.
Accept the gesture.
Thank you. God bless you. Then she has received the light from you that she was looking for, and nothing else is necessary. Thank you. God bless you. And then whatever you do, whether you put the egg down or whatever, it won't make any difference with her, because she has received the life from you.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't eat this right now. Thank you. Won't make any difference. Or you eat it. Won't make any difference, because she has received the light she sent you back from you. Got reflected back. It's nothing to do with Sam. Has to do with this person. How hard it is for us when our reactive mind kicks in to get there. Maybe a practical hint might be, here's a practical hint, when we get in our mind, what happens to our eyes? Right? That's what happens to get our, usually. So a practical hint might be, if someone does this and your mind kicks in, just focus on that person's eyes and breathe. Or if you're not adept at focusing on eyes, focus right here between the eyebrows and just focus there and take a breath. And just doing that, everything else will follow.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Now, if you believe that, would you buy this bridge? Anyway, but all these teachings just sort of show up for us, and we have to see if they go clunk in our hearts. And if they go clunk in our hearts, then we know they're true. So we let in what goes, ah. And what we're not sure about, we hold open for further examination.
Fly away. Right?
But a little bit of scratchy throat wouldn't let me pass it.
With or without the perfume.
We need to close because we're late. Let's focus on three conscious breaths. Ready? One. Deep in breath. Shanti. Shanti, Shanti.
Thank you, Steve.
And we go now holding the vibration of the universe in our hearts. And go in peace.